Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host, David Wondrich. How are you, Dave?
I'm good. How are you?
I am pretty good. We had created a little bit of a viral sensation a couple of weeks ago on half full when our old friend Lou Bryson, we had talked about him doing a story about older American whiskey, and then he wrote a story that
He had opinions.
he has a few opinions about this, I'm not gonna lie. And he was working on it, you know, for a number of weeks, interviewing range of legends, you know, in our industry, different master distillers. And you know, he was pretty excited about it, and he kept giving me updates, and I was trying to, like, you know, contain my excitement to read it and let him do his thing, not rush him. And then He turned it in, and I was pretty blown away. And the story, which we ran a few weeks ago, called "Stop Wasting Your Money on Bourbon That's Too Old," which I think says it all. You know, really touched the nerve with our readers and people who, you know, don't even read half full on a regular basis, and kind of went around the internet. And you know
people have a lot of money sunk into this at this point.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, a little bit contrary to what you know, a lot of bourbon writers and whiskey writers and the drinks industry as a whole has been telling people about whiskey over the last few years. I mean, certainly you and the rest of the half full team, you know, we always preach people should drink what tastes good to them, what they mm-hmm. like, and not waste their money on stuff that's over oaked or over for show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Overhyped. And, you know, I think one of the hallmarks of our section has been, you know, exposing things that are, you know, sort of undervalued, you know, relative bargains or things to avoid that are overpriced. And, you know, while American whiskey for decades has sort of been a great undervalued spirit, we're now entering an era when it's becoming, you know, overhyped, overblown, and sometimes overpriced.
Well, so parts of it, fortunately. Yeah,
absolutely. The extreme ends of it, I would say. But you hear about those extremes ever more often, which is, I think, part of what's driving this. Without further ado, we'll be joined by one of our favorite whiskey drinkers, Lou Bryson. Welcome, Lou. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
That's a pleasure.
A couple of weeks ago, you wrote a story for the Daily Beast suggesting people not waste their money on bourbon that's too old, on American whiskey that's too old. And it really hit a nerve with our readers. And, to be honest, it kind of went truly viral. So, you know, I thought definitely a lot there to discuss, and, you know, wanted to chat with you about sort of what inspired the story and, you know, drill down a little bit more about what the proper age is for buying and drinking bourbon and American whiskey.
The thing that really set it off is I just kept thinking about all the times I heard Jimmy Russell, the master distiller at Wild Turkey, talking about how his favorite age for bourbons is between, roughly between 8 and 12 years old. I mean, he stretches that a little bit to 7 now. And I think that might be because, I mean, Wild Turkey, you know, never had an age statement. Well, I shouldn't say never, it did. But in my lifetime that I remember drinking bourbon has not had a...
Which is quite vast. So, yeah.
It's a ways.
It used to have the 8 used to be an age statement.
And yeah.
That was back in like the 80s.
Yeah, back then I mostly thought about bourbon as a concept rather than as a drink.
I thought you were going to say condiment.
No. No, it's actually it's funny, you know. When I first started out drinking, I had a really bad experience with a bottle of Old Forester. Not that it was, you know, I didn't get sick or anything. It had just been in a basement, and it just tasted really musty.
Huh.
So I'm like, "Ugh, bourbon sucks. I'm not drinking that stuff." And I started drinking scotch, and I was actually drinking scotch in my really early 20s, and didn't get turned on to bourbon until like 10, 12 years later.
I had a bad experience with bourbon in high school, and I'm not going to go into the details. my body recognized it as poison for a long time. But interestingly enough, I learned I could drink rye.
Wow. That is an adaptation. Well, you know, I was the same way for a long time. I drank mezcal, but no tequila.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, I drank Old Overholt and not, you know, Beam. But eventually I learned that, no, it's actually not poison if consumed responsibly. it's actually quite pleasant.
That's funny. I remember someone complaining bitterly about how American rye whiskey all just tasted like bourbon because of those damn barrels. Wow. Well, okay.
Yeah. Well, we could, you know, age it in old socks, I suppose. Just to make it different.
So anyway, the thing with Jimmy was he was always saying that, and I used to joke that one of my proudest moments, which I mentioned in the story, was when I managed to get Jimmy to say that to a bunch of a room full of 400 whiskey geeks who were all just slavering at the idea of the next event after him, which was tasting a 21-year-old Stitzel Weller. which I had tasted the night before, and it was the color of espresso. It was just way over oaked.
Yeah,
it's like licking the bottom of a drawer.
I know. I gotta say, even after he said that, and they got served that stuff, they're like, "Ooh, yum! That is so good, boy." And I'm just, yeah, okay, all right.
I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's the triumph of the brain over the palate. Their brain, the people learned from most modern American whiskey geeks kind of came at it from scotch, I think, or at least the culture started with scotch for collecting whiskey and all that, where, you know, 12 years in Scotland is like an afternoon in Kentucky. I mean, it's the climate there is slow. And so they see 12 years, that's got to be good.
And they use barrels too.
Yeah, exactly.
Like in America, we use a new oak barrel, but in Scotland, they use a used bourbon barrel or
barrel. Somebody just sent me a link to a local news story about an American whiskey distiller. I mean, this is just yesterday. I was looking at this, and the guy's saying, "Oh yeah, we're using used barrels. You get more flavor out of those." And I'm just looking at it. No, you don't, buddy.
No, you don't.
And if you're the blender, that's scary.
Oh,
God. We've learned over the last few years, words like more can be actually mean less. So
yes.
I think talking about the barrel is important because obviously, like, to make, you know, American whiskey to be labeled as bourbon or rye, you have to use a new oak barrel, right? Which is usually American oak, and it's charred. And the problem is that, like, the oak, you know, depending upon who you talk to, the wood gives obviously all the color, but a lot of the flavor to the whiskey, right?
Yeah.
And there's like a certain sweet spot where you have the flavor from the alcohol, from the spirit, and then you have the flavor from the wood. And it's a balance between the two. And I think obviously it obviously varies depending upon how you make, you know, the spirit, how, you know, where your distillery is, how hot it is, how cold it is. So it's always that perfect kind of balance between the two. But you know, some of these older whiskeys that we keep seeing coming out, you know, 15, 20, whatever, God knows, 50, you know, people want, the balance gets skewed. Right.
Yeah. But I think, you know, as Dave said earlier, I think a lot of this comes from the age statements on scotch. You know, I still hear people talking about that. It's like, "Oh, my scotch is 12 years old. Your bourbon's only 8.
That's okay. Oranges,
but it's pretty damn close.
Well, you know, more Americans should have passports, I think. maybe go to Scotland. Go on a nice July day and stand out there in the rain in a river, freezing your buns off, trying to catch a fish that doesn't want to bite anything. And then say, okay, that's summertime here.
I was there years ago doing research for I think that my book, The Business of Spirits, and it was like a heat wave, and there were literally articles in the newspaper saying like, this is what sunscreen is, and this is why you need to put it on during this heat wave. Like, it was literally like a foreign concept to them, and it was like, it was amazing, you know, that they were like, there's no air conditioning in these places, you know, there's no you know, they don't need it, there's no sunscreen, you know, it's, or at least then, I mean, it was you know, the whole idea of a heat wave was a completely new phenomenon, and it shows in the whiskey. It takes longer for the whiskey to mature, obviously. In hotter climates, like, you know, it takes less time. You know, if it was, you know, if we go to the Caribbean, rum is traditionally not aged for 12 years or 20 years or 18
years.
You
can't.
It's just three to five is plenty for a Caribbean aged rum. You know, it's, it gets a lot done in that time.
You're fighting two things, right? You're fighting evaporation, right? What we call the angel share, right? So every year you're losing some of whatever, you know, either the liquid or the water or the alcohol is evaporating, right? Depending upon where you are, it's escaping from the barrel. And then also it's pulling ever more flavor. And at a certain point, I think, you know, we all talk about the baking notes and the sweetness from oak, but then at a certain point it turns to tannins.
That's the real problem.
You get over past
about 14 years and you start getting a lot of
And you feel in the side of your mouth. I mean, that's
It's that astringent pull,
And a little bit is good, but it's
exactly. You know, I mean, a little bit gives you some structure. It's nice, what they call grip. But man, I still remember, you know, the first 20-year-old Pappy I had was just over. I mean, other ones have got better, and that's the thing. Yeah. You know, when I wrote in the piece, it is not to say that there are no good bourbons over 15 years old. There are, but
it is rare.
They are rare. That's what, you know, the thing when I quoted Connor O'Driscoll from Heaven Hill, he's like, yeah, we had a 27-year-old whiskey and it was amazing. It was amazing that it was drinkable.
It was one, it was like, you know, one barrel out of millions.
Yeah, you said the other ones had to be tossed. They were just, you know.
Right. And that's, you know, say four barrel. I mean, it's very odd that for four barrels to make it that long anyway without falling apart completely. Right. Or But also, I mean, when you think about how many millions of barrels there are aging in Kentucky, I think there are more barrels than people at this point in the whole state.
It's actually twice as many.
Twice as many now, which is incredible.
Yeah. I wish the barrels could vote.
The fact is that out of the millions of barrels aging, how many of them can really or should go beyond 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years? I mean, it's a very small percentage. With every year, it's like a ever smaller number of barrels that can go, you know, another year or another 2 years or another. I mean, it's a very steep decline. I think there's this kind of idea that all barrels can age for decades.
Each warehouse only has like a little spot on the ground floor in the middle, you know, where it's a little bit protected from the highest temperatures, and you can only put a few barrels there. I mean, some barrels have to be on the upper floor, and those things are just going to cook.
For a lot of the, you know, the standard marks, right, the standard whiskey people put out on the, you know, whiskey on the younger side, and then, you know, over the last 10 years, I'd say, as a demand from, I'll say it, people like us, whiskey writers, bartenders, want ever older, ever more special releases, whether it's, you know, for the holidays, it's, it's gifts, but whatever it is, like they want a ladder, you know, to go up. You know, there's this terrible idea in America that older is better and more expensive is better when it comes to whiskey.
I think of a phone interview I did with a guy in a liquor store in Boston one time. I was doing a piece just for a trade journal and I needed to get some quotes. And I call the guy and he's working the floor. And I overhear him. He's like, hold on a sec. And he goes and he talks to this guy, and I can overhear him. You know, the phone's off the hook. And he's saying to the guy, well, you know, if you really want a 30-year-old, I can put you in a 30-year-old for a lot less than that. If it's the number that's important. And I'm like, it was like he was selling shoes to the guy. Right. So he comes back and gets on the phone. I'm like, so does that guy know what he's buying? He's like, yeah, he's buying a number. I'm like, well, there you are.
There you are.
Right. I mean, that's fine. You know, if that's what you want and you're never going to open up that bottle of, you know, 70-year-old bourbon, and it's going to be on your shelf and you're not going to subject anybody to it. Part of it is that they're not buying the whiskey to drink anymore. They're buying it as like a show item or an investment, which is, you know.
Yeah. It's almost like they're buying, you know, a Rolex or something.
Right.
So that everybody can see that they have this object.
And by the time it's pulled out, it's like if it's ever opened, it's, you know, the expectations are so high. I mean, it could be filled with, you know, apple juice, and everybody would say it's the best bourbon, because it's just like, you know, it's their expectation that it's going to blow them away. This is
what I tell people. Of course, those whiskeys are great. They have to be. When you spend that much money and work that hard to get them.
Yeah.
Of course. Right.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wonderful.
But that's the funny thing, is that, like, you know, we've all written stories over the last few years for Half Full about, you know, some of our favorite whiskeys, and sometimes we name them, sometimes we don't, because we don't want them to sell out, or are some of the ones that aren't the oldest whiskeys, that aren't the most expensive ones, that are sometimes hard to find because liquor stores are they're not stocking the bottom shelf as well as they used to, where some of the best whiskeys live. Like, that's the secret.
Oh, I mean, I think of whiskeys like, this is Irish whiskey, but the Bushmills 10-year-old malt whiskey.
Yeah.
Which is just perfection. I mean, 10 years, it does not need to be in barrels longer. After that, it's a light whiskey and you start to taste the barrel more and more. But at 10 years, it's you know, it's just delightful. But that whiskey never gets the respect that like the 12-year-olds and the 16-year-olds and the 21-year-olds get, even though the person who put that out knew at the time that they were getting the best out of that whiskey.
That's like that new one they've got, the in the hexagonal shaped bottle, Sexton, I think it's called.
Yeah,
young malt whiskey, and that is, I mean, for the price and flavor, it's delicious.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I remember one of the first stories that you wrote for Half Full, Lou, was one about Bottled and Bond. And it was kind of like, this is the gold standard for years. For whatever reason, it's sort of fallen out of favor among drinkers and bartenders. But yet the distilleries still make it. And the whiskey is wonderful. And it's like, if you see Bottled and Bond on a label, it's probably going to be good. And now, too good of a job telling people about Bottled and Bond, because it sort of backfired. We knew it would probably, but it backfired, because now, you know, they're really sought after in the prices, if anything, as they should have. I mean, it was undervalued, and it was, it was like, you know, you're telling me some of the best whiskey is bottled and bond at a higher proof than normal, but it sells for less. Like, what am I not getting? Like, I don't know, but just buy it. Stop asking questions. Just buy the whiskey.
Because that bottle of,
at some point, everybody's going to realize that something's wrong here. Like, you know, it's not.
And they did.
Right. They did. And now the Bottled and Bond stuff is 2, 3, 4, 5 times as expensive as it was 5 years ago. And it's the same stuff.
Or it's gone.
Or it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the ones that hurt when they realize they could make more money putting the same juice in a different bottle.
I think of the ill-fated Rye One.
Oh, God, yeah.
With they put Overholt in a truly hideous bottle with a really bad name.
Good rolling pin, though.
It is a perfect cylinder. I'll grant you that.
I think it might still be available, but yeah.
On the other hand, what they're doing with Old Overholt now is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a reasonably priced, 100 proof, not overly aged rye whiskey. And, you know, sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even they're not bonded, they reissued as non-chill filtered now. And
it actually makes a difference. That's the cool thing. You can actually taste that difference.
Yeah. It's got some richness to it.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, I feel like, you know, good whiskey should be recognized, right, and celebrated. So, you know, part of me, you know, we knew that some of our undervalued favorites would be rediscovered. And I'm glad that they are, because and given the credit they are, it's just, it hurts in the wallet sometimes. But
you can still get a lot of bonded whiskeys for pretty cheap.
Oh, for sure.
And they're all fine.
Well, until this podcast comes out. But yes, I mean, listeners, you know, before the last of these bargains disappear, go out and look for the bottled and bond of whiskeys.
But 4 years in Kentucky for American whiskey, you know, is plenty for aging. It's enough.
Yeah.
Right. And that goes back to the original question. Like, what is, like, you know, if 15, like what your story was saying, that like you talked to most of the legendary master distillers from Jimmy Russell at Wild Turkey to Fred Noe and Jim Beam, who's obviously a direct descendant of Jim Beam, the person, Fred Noe's. You know what, you know, 15 years old is too old, as most of these distillers agreed. What is the proper age then? I mean, it's, you know, like, is it like 4 to 8? Like, 6 to 8?
For me, I like the range between 6 and 12, because under 6, it's still a little brash for me, but at 6, I can still get a nice stiff shot in the face. Whereas at 12, I can sit down and linger with it. When it starts getting above 12, it starts getting too astringent. When it's below 6, it's maybe a little too shouty. But in between 6 and 12, that's the beautiful thing. Yeah. In between 6 and 12, you've got the option of bold and maybe a little blasty. And, you know, at the top end of that, you've got a really well integrated thing. And that was the thing that most of these guys were getting at when they were saying, you know, you've got a high end and a low end. At the low end, the whiskey wasn't getting integrated yet. And at the high end, it was getting overpowered.
Noah, what's your range?
Oh, I was hoping to skate by.
I've seen you drink whiskey.
I have drunk whiskey in the past. I think, you know, for me, it's very dependent, right, on the different distilleries. But for bourbon, there's a certain, for myself, when I drink it, like, I want a certain depth of flavor, right? Like, I like a really big, not tannic, but like a very, very big flavor, right? And I think sometimes, like, the original Russell's Reserve, the one that they came out with years ago, when they first thought that Jimmy Russell was going to retire, and they like did all these amazing things for him, and then he was like, wait, I'm not going anywhere. Like, why did you do all that? But the original one, which was, it's like, I have to go to work, dummy. It's like, I can't go to all these parties. Why do you keep throwing parties? The original one that he put out that Eddie chose for him or with him was incredible. And sometimes you see that with like the regular Blanton's, Buffalo Trace, some of the Four Roses. So, I mean, I think 4 is usually too young for me, but like really somewhere between 6 and 10 is often the sweet spot, where you're getting a real depth of flavor there. You're getting, you know, a good amount of the wood, but not so much the tannins of the wood. And you're like some of the sharpness of the alcohol has sort of burned off. So you're not getting, you know, even if it's high proof, you're not getting like, you know, that strong alcohol note, like, you know, getting punched in the nose by it, that like it sort of mellowed a little bit. The flavors have come together and you get that, you know, and it's, you know, it should be easy to drink, you know, and I think a lot of people think, you know, when, especially as they pay ever more money for it and it's older, that it should be hard, right?
Oh,
it's,
no.
Like it should be for everybody, you know, if it was easy, you know, it's not for everybody, you know, and it's like,
it's expensive because it's rare. It's not necessarily rare because it's good.
Right. And like, you need to be a certain type of person to appreciate it. And like, how could I ever appreciate something so refined? It's like, that's whiskey. Like it should be enjoyable.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed that those were pretty much the core of all the comments and responses I got on that story that were dismissive or, I don't know, arguing against, was essentially that if you don't like whiskey over 12 years old, it's because you have a simple palate.
Right.
Oh, hey.
Right.
I know,
like,
I mean,
come on. No. I mean,
it's a pretty convenient argument.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not saying that, you know, there, I'm sure there are people out there who like a very wooded whiskey, right?
Yes.
Like a very tannic one. And they are rare. That is not a common palate, right? But it exists, right? And I think there should be whiskey of all kinds. But for most people, that's not what they want.
That's
not what tastes good. You know what I mean? That's like a very small amount of people. And that's not to say that those people have any better palate than you or I. They're not super tasters. Yeah. They're not, you know, their palates aren't
more evolved.
Right. They shouldn't be insured by Lloyd's of London. It's like burning a cake and saying, well, you don't like my burned cake. Well, you don't know what good cake is. Like, you don't, you know, you know, if you had a better palate, you'd like my burn cake, you know.
I mean, I'd say after 2 decades of doing many, many blind tastings and judging spirits competitions, I have a fairly well-developed palate. I could tell Irish whiskey from Scotch and all that kind of stuff, like blind, you know, cachaça from Rum Agricole or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, reasonably good at like, at least getting the main primary colors of these things. And, you know, for me, Jimmy Russell, when I first met him in like 2001, he said 6 to 10 years was the sweet spot. And I kind of like 4 to 10, I've got to say. I'm good with 4-year-old whiskey.
Okay.
But that's because of one little word, which is ice.
Yeah.
Oh, true. You know, okay.
I'll put it on the rocks and I think it's delicious.
Like
any 4-year-old bonded, like bonded old granddad, for sure. 1799.
Oh, yeah.
Quart, you know, that stuff is fine when you put it on the rocks.
Or in a highball with some club soda or ginger beer.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's so good.
Very good point.
And
then, you know, and American whiskey grew up with ice. We were always putting ice into our whiskey since the 1850s. I mean, 1840s. That's a long time, you know?
Yeah,
it took me a while to get to that point, but I finally told the Scotch, just screw.
Yeah.
You know,
I put ice in my Scotch now.
That's how it is.
Yeah, I mean, because it tastes good. I mean, again, it's like, you know, you don't get any extra points for, you know, drinking it a way that you don't enjoy, you know?
Exactly. That's,
you know, I don't know. You're right, because the younger the age and the higher the proof, it stands up obviously better in ice and water and cocktails. And
if it's a nice, like 8 to 10 years old, I probably will just pour it into a glass and leave the ice aside unless it's really hot out or whatever. 4 years old is already, it's reached the first balance it hits between grain and wood. And it doesn't taste like unbaked grain or bread dough or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think at 4 years in Kentucky aging, it does taste like whiskey, but it is a little rambunctious and punchy. A little bit of ice will definitely chill it. But
and obviously it varies from brand to brand too.
Yeah, it does.
And that's, I think at some of the bonded ones, you have the best shot at finding a really, really good 4-year-old whiskey.
Well, of course, the other thing we all have to keep in mind is, you know, what actually sells. What the most people are drinking is blended scotch and 4-year-old bourbon.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's a reason why that they have been endearingly popular. You know, it's
it's the balance. You know, it's your trade-off.
Well, 12-year-old blended scotch on the rocks got me through the first half of the pandemic. So, in a big bucket glass. Big glug of scotch, and you just kind of sit there and cross your legs and let your heel kick back and forth and just nod your head and hope it all ends soon. But at least you got something to calm you down, you know?
Thank you, Lou, for coming on this afternoon, evening. I will pour myself a glass of 35-year-old bourbon and toast you in your honor. My glass made out of wood. I will have my wooden glass I shall fill with some over-oaked bourbon and toast you. I know that's how you like to drink your whiskey.
So. Don't forget the oak stirring stick.
The oak, of course. And the wooden ice cube. Yes, the wooden ice cube. The tea bag made of wood shavings. I know you. That's how I know you like it. So I will drink in your honor. But thank you, Lou, for coming on. We appreciate it.
That was a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure, Lou.
Good to talk to you guys.
You too.
Take care.
Cheers. Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.